I've been a little out of touch, so I'm just going to read a few beforehand to find out this, the question, what was asked. All the answers. Maharaj Pariksit come across a bull who's been disturbed, been suffered, been caused suffering by the Kali, disguised as a king, and he's saying the supreme duty of the ruling king is to give all protection to law-abiding persons and to chastise those who stray from ordinance of scriptures in ordinary times when there is no emergency. The personality of religion said, this is the bull, these words just spoken by you benefit a person of the Pandava dynasty, captivated by the devotional qualities of the Pandavas. Even Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, performed duties as a messenger. O greatest among human beings, it is very difficult to ascertain the particular miscreant who has caused our sufferings, because we are bewildered by all the different opinions of theoretical philosophers. Some of the philosophers who deny all sorts of duality declare that one's own self is responsible for his personal happiness and distress. Others say that superhuman powers are responsible, while yet others say that activity is responsible, and the gross materialists maintain that nature is the ultimate cause. There are some thinkers who believe that no one can ascertain the cause of distress by argumentation, nor know it by imagination, nor express it by words. O sage amongst kings, judge for yourself by thinking over all this with your own intelligence. Then the days. Sutta Goswami said, O blessed among the Brahmanas, the Emperor Pariksit, thus hearing the personality of religion speak, was fully satisfied. And without mistake or regret, he gave his reply. And this very short purport, the Prabhupada is pointing out that first of all that this bull was not an ordinary one. To give an answer like that, that who caused his suffering, that I don't know who caused my suffering, I don't know why I'm suffering. Who was that person? He said, hey, there's so many, as we just heard, there's so many different theories or philosophies saying what is actually the cause of one's suffering and happiness. So then Emperor Pariksit understands it's not an ordinary bull speaking this philosophy. So then the Emperor now is going to reply over to the point. And without doubts or mistakes, Maharaj Pariksit is a great devotee of the Lord. So therefore he is well learned in all of the conclusions of different philosophies, because they all end in the practice of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that by the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the companion of the Vedas. And it is true, ultimately, that I can only be known actually by bhakti. Bhakti mam, mijanati. That this is the actual only way to know. So Krishna himself, in many, many, many places in Bhagavad Gita, he's pointing out that he is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes. And that different people are trying to understand him. Some people aren't trying to understand, some people are trying to understand. And the ones that are trying to understand, out of those few, then they have different methods, they have different approaches. And the Krishna's recommended that the actual two, three processes there is the process of karma, that is offering the fruits of your activities, engaging in prescribed activity, jnana, it's a path of detachment, and yoga is a path of strict sense control and mind control. And then there's also bhakti. But Krishna is saying that one who has achieved the goal, the actual point of one, he knows the paths of all, he knows the goal of all of them, because they're all actually the same. They're all meant to ultimately understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He said, well, the Vedas are to know him, to know me. So whether you, if one has a lot of material desires, then the path of karma is recommended so they can fulfill their material desires, at the same time make advancement towards the Lord. They fulfill their material desires by the method which is prescribed in the Vedas, which is coming from Krishna. So it's something there for all, for different types of people. But ultimately, they all culminate. That's for purification. You're doing these processes, and it's for purification. Whether it's karma, you're purifying your activities by offering results to the Lord, and that's love. And jnana, you're purifying yourself by becoming detached from material activities, from material thoughts, trying to understand the absolute truth. So fixing one's intelligence, and then one gets, that's much quicker process of purification, knowledge that burns up ignorance very quickly. And then the yogis who are doing it, also following the prescribed procedure, but by doing it by self-control, controlling the body, mind, and the life areas in the body, so ultimately they actually perceive the super soul, if they're fortunate. And the path of devotional service, one directly takes to serving the Lord from the very beginning, and that activity will purify the consciousness. The activity is already pure, but the consciousness is impure, because it generally the living entities are self inclined, so they're using God to fulfill their own agenda. But the bhakti process is direct. Because we're already engaged in serving Krishna without waiting for purification. And by doing that, purification will come. And then when purification is there, then we continue serving the Lord with pure consciousness. Whereas on those other paths, when they understand Vasudeva Sarvamiti, when I understand it's the Lord who is to be served, then they give up the particular path. They've reached the end of their path, and now they understand. That's why Krishna says they all culminate in bhakti. All these processes culminate in bhakti. So anyone who has taken the devotional service, it is explained that he knows the conclusions of all the other philosophies, even though he may not be a very great scholar. Even they may not know that per se. But still they're perfectly engaged. But generally the devotees who are practicing part of the process of bhakti, sadhana bhakti, is hearing, the big part is hearing, and then chanting. It means hearing about Krishna, his name, fame, quality, pastimes, etc. So you're going to hear all these different the bhakti shastras, so the Bhagavatam, and etc. They're full of stories. Culminating in pure devotional service of the Lord. So there's stories about devotees and non-devotees. But they have a philosophical content there. Some of these very deep, some are very philosophical, only philosophical, and some are just in a story form, or some are analogies. But they have a very deep philosophical point to be made. And they're recommended in this particular age because everyone is fallen this particular time. So therefore, Mahabharata, Ramayana, Bhagavatam, we get the philosophy through these histories and stories. Otherwise no one can understand the essence of the Vedas directly. So that's how it's, that's their better way. So it's better now, they're actually better than the Vedas. These Vedas are very difficult to perceive. So here, so Prakshit understanding, so he's not a fool, he's not an ordinary person, he's the emperor. He's had darshan of the Lord. He's heard Srimad Bhagavatam, so he knows all these. He knows all these things perfectly well. So he's acting like a king, which is considered the mode of passion. He's ready to kill somebody. Actually, he's the greatest of all. But anyway, now he's come across Dharma personified in the form of the bull, and he's very surprised that who has done this to you. Who has caused you this distress? Dharma said, who can say? Who has caused you distress? So he's presenting the different philosophies there. So that is very a deep subject matter. And actually, we say, you know, everything is karma. There's two things, there's karma or there's Krishna's mercy. There's nothing else. The material world means karma, action and reaction. It's fixed. Krishna's mercy means luck. The spiritual path means chance, good luck, that you've actually connected to it. And then it's because that as soon as one sincerely tries to surrender to Krishna, then Krishna says he takes control. As soon as one sincerely is trying to surrender to Krishna, then Krishna takes control. So that you come out of the karma then. You're not subjected to karma, because if one is sincerely trying to surrender to Krishna, then they accept the Guru, that's the first thing. And sincerely trying to execute the instructions of the Guru, whose only business is to help the dependents to become Krishna conscious. So therefore the instructions are there, the do's and don'ts are there. So one sincerely follows those, that's technically liberation. Imperceptible liberation, Prabhupada says. You're imperceptibly liberated when you're following the instructions of the devotees. But generally we say, when we suffer, we generally say, it's Krishna's mercy. Some or other. My simple reactions. Mostly the acharyas are saying, because of my past sinful reactions. This is in their humility, they may speak like that, because normally that's how we understand that suffering is coming from disobedience to the laws of God. As soon as you don't follow the laws of God, you're going to get into trouble, unless you can do something with somehow or other by chance. It is within the laws of God. But if you don't follow, then that's called adharma. So therefore, the result will be suffering in one way or another. Suffering in the mode of goodness, suffering in the mode of ignorance, or suffering in the mode of passion. But in any case, you're prolonging your stay in the material world, which is ultimately is suffering. So who's actually responsible? So Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says that the living entity is responsible. Or Krishna says, I'm not responsible. Although I'm the doer of everything, I'm the sanctioner of everything, because he's the super soul in the heart. He's reminding you. For me, coming remembrance, intelligence, forgetfulness. So he's reminding us of the situation where we can enjoy. And he's also arranging, through the agency of material energy, the situation where we can experience suffering, to burn out, use our bad karma. So that's all done by Krishna's arrangement through his different energies, the demigods. So he's actually doing everything. He's behind everything in that sense. He's not personally involved. But this one is sincerely trying to approach Krishna. So Krishna says that, but I'm not responsible for their, I think he says happiness and distress. I'm not sure. Correct me if I'm wrong. I can't remember that sort of people. But he says, Krishna says, although I'm doing everything, I'm the ability in the person, I'm all the ingredients are supplied by him, the whole cosmic manifestation is coming from him. Earth, water, fire and air, mind, intelligence, ahankara, they're all these elements. So we're placed in that, in his inferior energy, and start to identify, according to your condition, according to your previous condition, you're identifying with that situation that you find yourself in by his arrangement, by higher arrangement, and you're more or less going on helplessly, dictated by the modes of nature and following your mind. And Krishna's actually reminding, and he's giving intelligence how to achieve what you want. If you want to perform activities, Krishna also gives those intelligence, which will take you to hell. He's not, Krishna's not attached. He's indifferent. he's a witness. As a super soul, he's just a witness. He's not taking any sides there. So he's supplying intelligence according to what you deserve. So that's, again, we see that's all, really it's coming back from karma. It's karma there. So we're simply experiencing the actions and reactions of our previous pious and sinful activities. Trying to enjoy and trying to control. And control means that there's some fear, there's some object. The purpose is to enjoy, but there's always obstacles in the material world, always obstacles. So to achieve what we want, we have to control the situation. So really nothing else is going on. Just these two things everyone is trying to do. Trying to control the situation so that they can be free. There's no pressure, then they can start enjoying, think about enjoying. But anyway, it's all going on. It's all being delivered by karma. So you really can't change that. Prahlad Maharaj tells his chums at school, he said, why are they working so hard for happiness, making so many plans for happiness, when the distress is coming automatically? You don't ask for distress, it comes. So it just comes by itself. So you can't stop that distress. At least you can't stop it coming. You can't stop it appearing. You may be able to somehow avoid it by your programs. But it's there, so it's the same way your happiness is automatically coming, because that distress is just a result, a manifestation of your previous pious activities. Sorry, the happiness. And the distress is a manifestation of your previous impious activities. So there's no need. So don't waste your energy trying to control and enjoy the situation, struggling hard for happiness, and struggling hard to try to avoid the distress. It's going to come anyway. That's your karma. Rather, you be satisfied and you have to tolerate. And just depend. Everyone has a different level of tolerance. It's not you can just say, well, everything depends on Krishna. And you can't do that. Generally, we can't. Unless your one is very advanced. No, when there's a problem, we try to resolve the problem. If it's too severe, if you're sick, you take medicine. But you know, there's a whole variety of medicine, different degrees of medicine you can take. For instance, some people won't take medicine. Some people won't take allopathic medicine. But anyway, It depends on one's tolerance level. How much you can tolerate sickness, other people, the climate, the condition, any condition like that. That's all it depends on. Where is your breaking point? So everyone has those different. Everyone has different degrees of tolerance. But as far as possible, you simply have to tolerate. You can't really change the situation in this body. Just like you have to tolerate old age, disease, and death. Not much you can do about it. So, whose fault is that? Why is that coming? So we see that if it's not the arrangement of the Lord, then it's my previous impious activities, that it's this person is come to deliver my dues. Instead of blaming the person who's making us upset or disturbing us, then we see that he's just a messenger. It was described as just like the postman. He may deliver a check that you won the lottery if you gamble. But it also may deliver a summons from the court that you're in big trouble. But he's neutral. He's just a postman. Similarly, the stress and happiness that we experience when it's a problem, then we always blame the person or the situation. Sometimes you say, well, even in devotional service, I'm having so much problems. I thought the devotees were supposed to be ideal, but still I'm finding I'm having problems with devotees. Well, who else is going to give you problems? We're living with devotees. The ones that are living in the ashram. We don't mix with karmis and demoniac people. We only live with someone's got to deliver the message. Someone's got to deliver the bad goods. So we should see it like that. Philosophically, we should see it like that. Otherwise, we see it as the Lord's mercy. Anyway, it's the Lord's mercy. Whether it's directly the Lord's mercy or whether it's karma, it's the same thing. They're both for the same purpose. The suffering is meant to tell you that you don't belong in this place and you should try to leave this place altogether. So whether it's coming from Mahamaya or Krishna directly, it's the same thing. We can't understand. We don't know who it's from, how it's from. But we understand the pure devotees. Krishna says, and I take personal charge. They don't come under the inferior energy anymore. He personally takes charge. But still you see the acharyas. Because I am so sinful, I was so wretched person, and I'm just simply suffering the results of my impious activities. That's in their humility. But in either case, this is how we should we see philosophically. Better you see it's Krishna's mercy, because then you're remembering Krishna. But anyway, even if it's Maya or Krishna, anyway, Krishna's behind it, because Maya cannot move without Krishna. So the devotee knows all these purports. We know that Maya is not independent of Krishna. The demigods are not independent of Krishna. So they're controlling the whole material cosmic situation, the demigods. So, but they're getting their potency from Krishna. They're getting their ability from Krishna. And also they have their own world to live in. They have their own amount of distress and happiness also, on a different dimension. So in any case, we can always see the Lord's hand in everything. So in the beginning, that's how we're supposed to see. Krishna says, earth, water, fire, and air. These are my fear images. The trees are my hairs, the rivers are my veins, the mountains are my bones, the sun and moon are my eyes. So whatever, somewhere you've got to start somewhere how to remember Krishna. So we can see Krishna in everything. So Maharaj Parikrit is of this caliber. And then he will give a nice reply to Dharma in the form of a bull. Jaisma Bhagavatam ki jai, Simple Pad ki jai, Tego Pramandi. Any questions or comments? Yes, Phil.
In fact, people who don't believe in karma, they say that those who believe in karma is kind of a heartless philosophy. And of course, everything is predetermined and it's people's own fault. So it's how do we explain that it's actually not?
It's not.
The Christians, they say that. They say it may be cynical if you believe in karma.
You see, when you enter karma, it's if you speak like that, it's, to non-devotees, you gotta be careful because we don't understand karma. Nobody can understand karma properly. There's no like elaborate description of how everything works. And it seems there are chance or accident. Just like to commit suicide is not karma. The airplane crashes, it's not everyone's karma to die, you know, exactly that second. But that can adjust whether you should have died 6 months ago or a couple of years later. That'll just adjust in the next life. It's not a big thing. But generally, we say it's all, you know, because they argue with if it's destiny, if it's karma, that means everything's planned, right? That means the future is already chalked out. So you go up and jump off the roof. It was supposed to happen. Everything that happens is supposed to happen. So the destiny philosophers. You run into that problem with them if everything's karma. Nothing happens by chance. No. You have your free will. So if you misuse that free will, if you take your own life or kill somebody else, then ultimately we say it's generally had to happen more or less. The devotee can see Krishna in it. But like we do get stuck on some of these fine points because there's no real description of a fine description of karma in the scriptures existing. So you have to be a little careful when you're dealing with non-devotees or non-Vedic or non-philosophical people. Say something.
Sorry?
There's
a lot of devotees that want to hear about this, you know, kind of responsibility for the individual leader. And specifically, when you see discussions about the child abuse in Islam, there's no acceptance, seemingly, on the part of some people that this is their karma to a certain degree and they have to accept that it's all somebody else's fault. So even amongst the road circle, it's not something that's easily discussed or accepted, that there's a responsibility karmically for the individual to accept what's happening to them.
Mm.
If you say that to someone, then they say you have no compassion. You
right.
Don't understand Vaishnava compassion.
Right.
And it's like the end of conversation.
Yeah.
So you can't say it.
Yeah, but we don't say that. In a delicate case like that, you wouldn't say it. No, your kid gets abused and you say it's karma, don't worry about it. Or someone's lying really sick, oh, it's your karma. No. Why go to hospital? It's your karma. Just stay in my apartment and die. You don't do that. You try all means to come over. There you have to be, I'm saying, you have to be a little sensitive there. For the individually, we say it's karma. For myself, it's karma. That's how, personally, we should see it. We shouldn't see it as somebody else's fault. But if we see somebody else abusing somebody, then it's their fault, and we punish them. But if it happens to us, we should think, that is my karma. I deserve that. Someone had to bring that. Had to come some way. It came this way. If it wasn't that way, it'd been another way. But that doesn't justify it for, leniency or. See, the philosophers are the Brahmanas. The Prabhupada said, the Brahmana will always forgive. He said, but the Kshatriya, he not. There's a rule, he followed the law. He said, but Brahmana will always forgive. But the Kshatriya, that's not his business to forgive. His business is to punish or reward according to is to follow the law. See, the Brahmana, they're in the mode of goodness. That's what Brahmana means. So, What have you got to gain or lose? That's for the devotees. What have you got to lose or gain? You know, it's difficult. People, some of us, interfere in my service, and someone's they're doing this. They're really this is wrong. It's a little tricky there to speak like this, to speak to its karma. But if they're older devotees, then you can say you try to accept it. You know that there's a reason behind it. Why you and why Krishna's allowed to happen to you if he's controlling. So Krishna says I'm not responsible for their activities. That's for the non-devotees. In other words, you're responsible for your own actions and reactions. You have your free choice. You have your freedom. So broadly, we use this term broadly, that we misused our independence. We chose not to serve Krishna, and therefore we're suffering now. Or we chose to serve Krishna before, and then we're enjoying now because of pious activities. But it's so fine, this laws of karma, that no one can really figure out all the intricacies. But for ourselves, we should think like that. Otherwise, Mahaprabhu's Sushastikam, which is the essence of all the philosophy, is that one should be more tolerant to, devoid of all sense of false prestige, ready to offer respect, not expecting any respect for oneself. You can embrace me or you can kick me away as your prerogative. And I just, so in other words, in any circumstance, I'm just going to carry on performing service. This is the goal. This is the high class consciousness, thinking like that. No, Krishna, that you're depending on Krishna. So if you're actually sincerely depending on Krishna, then why is he abusing me like this? Why is Krishna abusing me like this? Why? There's a reason there, and you can't question. If you accept him, if you're accepting you're his slave and he's a master, there's no, you can't question the master. What he does. If you want to be his servant, you want to be sold out to Krishna, then you can't say you can embrace me or kick me away, and then someone, when he kicks you, say, "Oh Krishna, why are you doing this to me? Why me? Why has it happened to me?" How can you? Someone was saying they was really sick, they had a high fever, and they were suffering like anything. And he was a brahmachari then, and he was in hospital for days, and the fever just wasn't going down. His brain was boiling, and he was going mad. Practically speaking, he was going delirious. But he was just hanging on, it's Krishna's arrangement. I'm not going to pray to Krishna because I'm his servant. I'm not going to pray for any relief. It got so intolerable. It said, "Krishna, please help me. Please stop this pain." He said, "Either kill me or stop this pain." He says, he tolerated so many days. But he said, "I couldn't tolerate anymore." I said, "Krishna, please take away this pain." So after a little while, it went away. What can this is ideal. That's a philosophy. This is a standard you come to. We can come to. It means the standards that are set by the Goswamis or the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, that you can never reach these standards. These great devotees, you can never reach these standards. But that they're there for that purpose. So you can't reach them. That means there's always more to go. You'll always be endeavoring more and more. You can't reach the end. You can't reach the end of knowledge. You can't know Krishna perfectly. So in all these aspects, they're all unlimited. Krishna's unlimited. So you see the acharyas, they perform so many wonderful activities. Whatever we do, he's done it, and he's done it better. He's done it full, you know. Now, he distributed the books in the scorching Delhi sun and collapsed. And everything single-handed, he printed them, he distributed them. We think it's austere now. He went to, you know, had to sit on the ship for so many days, had a heart attack. He had no, but his only business was for the compassion of others. He had no self-interest there. So his consciousness was really good there, but his activity, also by activity, Pracharanacha, was there. And he never used it. We never heard him complain about his. I one devotee was complaining once. I was, why are you complaining? He says, you know, when I travel in the airplanes, he said, my knee hurts me so much. He said, you ever heard me talk about it? He said, every time I sit down for a period like that in the seat, he said, I suffer so. He said, I don't talk about it. So he's tolerant. So everything you can do, like this, the standard is already there and more. That's to keep you determined. Huh? Be enthusiastic. There's more to go. That's why a Brahmana is never satisfied with knowledge. Like a Kachi is never satisfied with the kingdom either. He always wants more and more. Like that. The Vaishya is never satisfied with his bank balance. He always wants more and more. That's in nature. So similarly, a Brahmana is never satisfied. And the devotee, although he's always satisfied, he still is. For the pure devotee, they're not interested in their own benefit because they already have Krishna. Whether they're having a hard life or an easy life, it's indifferent because you only got to hang on for a few more years in this body, and it's the last one. So whether you have a lot of nice things and facility, and otherwise it could be austere, or it could be very troublesome. You could have a service which is really you have to engage with so many demoniac elements. But anyway, except that's Krishna's arrangement. So if we understand, we're trying to, Krishna's promise to protect us. Prabhupada said you can go back in a lifetime if you're sincere. And obstacles, I was reading that calendar the other day, don't worry about the obstacles, he wrote to someone. He said, I can kick them away. Easily, I can very easily, I can kick them all away, the obstacles for you. Anyway, today is the appearance of Champakalada. So, if we may read something about Champakalada Devi. Let's see. Her mother is Vatika, and her father is Arama, and her husband is Chandaksha. Her complexion is yellow white, like the full blown Champaka flowers. It's different Champaka flowers. No, there's the white one with the yellow frangipani, there's Golok Champa, there's Green Champa, there's Katali Champa, different, very all sweet flowers. Anyway, she's I think they're referring to those frangipani, what do you say? What do you say, frangi or frangi? Frangipani. Yes. Her cloth is chataka, brown, like a sparrow's feather. Her grove is to the south, named Kamalata, the vine of Cupid. And that is Tapta Jambunada. The color of her kund is like molten gold. Service, chamara, chalanam. She waves the chamara, and ratna maladhana. She offers jeweled necklaces. We understand also she offers these flowers, champaka garlands. Age, (14 to 13.5). She's one day younger than Radha. And her mood is Vasaka Saja, the heroine who decorates herself and waits for her beloved to arrive. That's her mood. And her temperament is Vama Madhya, which means moderately contrary. And her favorite instrument is the sarangi. And her maidservant is Guna Manjari. And she has 8 girlfriends. Kurangakshi, Surachita, Mandali, Manimandana, Chandika, Chandralatika, Chandukakshi, and Sumandira. Her special talents, she's learned in many arts, just as her father is. In many ways, her qualities resemble those of Vishakha. She is also greatly skilled in gambling with dice. The girls of a rival group will never even walk near her. She collects fruits, flowers, and roots from the forest, using only her hands. She artistically fashions things from clay. She knows the literature that describes the 6 flavors of gourmet cooking, and is so good at making different kinds of sweetmeats that her nickname is Misty Hasta, Sweet Hands. The kitchen located in her grove is very famous. Also a skilled messenger, she can carry out her activities clothed in absolute secrecy. Expert in the art of logical persuasion, she is a skilled diplomat who can cleverly thwart the gopis of a rival group. See how qualified these gopis are. Her identity in Gaur Leela is Sivananda Sen. Some say Raghava Goswami. Here's a prayer. Who holds a jewel chamara whisk in hand, whose skin is yellow like the champaka, whose exquisite cloth is like the beautiful feathers of a bluebird, whose good qualities can be compared in all ways to Vishakha's. O Radhe, I offer my obeisances unto your girlfriend, Champakalata. What is Champakalata ki jay? Sivopar ki jay. Offer on the...